Welcome to How I See It with me, Mark Pratt, and
Justin Sternberg. This is a podcast that works to counter cultural polarization through thoughtful conversations.
So in that whole process, I apologize, did that answer your question in the context of identifying that codependency and how I give somebody like baby steps for that?
I think so. I think, just summarize it. What would be the best baby step you'd give someone who's really kind of on that far spectrum? What are some baby steps they could do to work on that?
Well, I think there is something to be said for talking with someone. Being able to identify where I see myself.
Okay. So an safe and objective third party kind of thing.
Yes. Okay. Yes. To be able to say, okay, this is what I'm thinking. And it, in some ways I like the, you know, an objective, you know, if you have a healthy relationship, yes. Being able to ask your spouse, your partner, you know, hey, if I'm thinking about this, you know, in this context, is this kind of where I come from for the most part as you see it? You know, if that's healthy and it's able to be objective, I think that's a great place to start. You know, am I being aggressive? Do I tend to be or do I, you know, float back and forth? You know, but at the same time, if I'm already in a codependent relationship, that's not necessarily a safe place to be.
Right,
that.
Right.
That's the caveat. Yeah.
Your girlfriend who always is willing to pile on with you say, well, you just need to leave that jerk. You know, that
yes.
That might not be the right safe objective third party either if their main objective in your life is to just prop you up.
Yeah. Prop you up or you be more like me.
Yeah.
Because that's not always a healthy thing either. If I'm just surrounding myself with people like me, I'm gonna end up more like them.
Yes.
You follow me, show me who your friends are, mm-hmm. and I'll show you who you become in 5 years, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think it does, I think in, you know, areas where we can have healthy relationship, you know, good, positive social interactions, and I'm going to say, you know, certain church dynamics, you know, F3, you know, for myself as a guy, these are guys that I can talk with, mm-hmm. about where I'm at. I can talk with you about, mm-hmm. where I'm at. I can talk, you know, CR. I can go there, you know, and I can have interaction in a way that isn't necessarily trying to fix me, but yet that it's just helping me identify where I am and avoid, mm-hmm. the denial. Recognize the denial.
Yeah. 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 That's great. And if you're not even sure where to turn in it, it's like, you're just like, you know, when you rock bottom, right? You're in this situation where you just, I'm desperate for help. Well, there's certainly resources. I mean, counseling, highly recommend counseling, get a counselor. But if you can't afford that, or if that's not something that you can find support for in your environment, I mean, I can heartily recommend something like Celebrate Recovery, where you can walk through the door, start communicating about this stuff, start learning some tools, start developing relationships that can eventually be that safe, you know, third party that's objective or whatever. But
And there again, that's a free resource, you know.
Yeah.
And coming back to that conflict, I'm going to have to overcome some natural resistance that I have to that change. You know, I'm going to have to recognize that, this is going to take, you know, me coming against myself to a certain degree, mm-hmm. to promote change. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a certain resistance to my, you know, homeostasis, if you will, that, mm-hmm. I've developed that I'm comfortable here. You know, we have to, mm-hmm. overcome that in such a way and be able to recognize our change on our part isn't necessarily always going to be accepted by people around us.
In accepting that in yourself, that there's going to have to be some change that I need to make that might change some of the relational aspects of, you know, just the relationships.
Some of my current
relationships
may have to change.
Yeah.
Yeah. I may have to find new relationships, mm-hmm. that help support the direction I desire to head. Because, mm-hmm. if I'm not willing to enter into conflict and I'm pulling back, and I'm not actually growing or, mm-hmm. changing, I'm just maintaining, mm-hmm. or which in effect pulling back.
Yeah. So that's good. We talked about that end of the spectrum, the kind of the codependence. Mm-hmm. I want to spend a little time on the other end because in my estimation, they're both very problematic, right? And in fact, in Alcoholics Anonymous and Celebrate Recovery, we say a codependent is as sick as the addict, right? Because their relationship is equally, you know, it's hard to explain. Basically, they're in a sick state just as much as the addict is, sure. Okay? So yeah. I don't want to say one is worse than the other, but I do want to say that the power dynamic with somebody who's kind of, you know, pushes people over, kind of that bull, right? The bull in the china shop. The power dynamic makes them a little more dangerous, right? I want to say. And so I think it'd be good to spend some time on that. And I think the biggest risk factor or problem factor in that side of the spectrum is denial.
Sure.
Well, everything's great to me, so I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you feel like in those, you know, those situations where you're counseling or whatever, that that's a pretty common thing where it's just a complete blindness and like, well, things are fine on my end. I don't know what the problem is. Mm-hmm. And it's clear in this situation where we're both talking and this person's all upset and hot and bothered and I'm totally chill. Mm-hmm. We all know where the problem is, right?
Yeah.
It's clearly not me. I'm fine. I'm cool. I'm chill. I'm happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on baby steps there or even, I mean, yeah, just I'd love to start.
And I guess I'm going to clarify a little bit when I think of the other end of the spectrum. I'm going to tend to think of someone who is, when you say power differential, I'm going to tend to think of someone who tends to be aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. That's how I'm going to address that.
Well, that's how they maintain their everything's perfectly fine.
Sure.
Right.
So. No, and what you'll hear from the passive, if they're able in a safe setting, is, yeah, but that's not who you are. You follow me? If they feel safe enough, they're going to be able to say, yeah, but that's not who you normally are. This calm demeanor that you're, you know, exuding or, you know, trying to have in here, that's not who you are. Now, if a person's really on that codependent end, they're not necessarily going to be able to say that. That's going
to
take some time.
They might be afraid to say that.
Exactly, yeah. Because it's not safe to say that, because I will be punished if I say anything that's wrong with you. You follow me? That's where, and
I think we're setting up why this is such a problem. You know, so I guess that's,
well, here's
how do we give clues to the listener who maybe, I mean, I know I've struggled on this side of the dynamic. I've also struggled on codependency with certain relationships, and there's other relationships where I've been on that kind of power differential and aggressive. And, you know, I've worked a lot on a lot of the stuff, and maybe I still have both of those. And that's not the point. The point is, there are times you couldn't have convinced me it was me.
Right.
So I guess, like, I would love to know how we start cracking that shell for a listener right now listening who is that person, maybe not all the time or not to every relationship, but to a few key relationships, that they can go, oh, maybe that's me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, for me, there again, if I'm working with that aggressive person, I'll say in a setting in my office, I'm gonna start identifying patterns and cycles. Okay, help me understand how relationships work for you. You follow me? How many close friends do you have? Well, I don't really have many close friends. You know, maybe just, you know, the kids that I grew up with. What's that relationship like? Well, you know, we're just friends. We just hang out, you know, that kind of thing. And I think we have to start by gaining that insight in such a way that says, okay, how do I conduct my relationships? And am I willing to recognize that I have this tendency to have very limited relationship, and I burn through relationships pretty quickly. I don't have too many friends, and you know, that kind of thing. And I would, there's a thing, I'll call it the thing, a premise. It's called like ego mass. Okay. So normally, two people who enter into a relationship have like ego mass. That's why healthier people marry healthier people. More unhealthy people, I'll say, attract more unhealthy people. Because I tend to think about people being like me. So I'm attracted to people who kind of are in the same health realm that I am, like ego mass. Makes sense?
Like Bonnie and Clyde.
Well, it's more about the fact that, yes, you're attractive to me because we're like, even in our unhealth, just as much as we are in our health.
I just think about certain relationships that are very, you know, unhealthy individuals.
Sure.
That are an unhealthy relationship, and it's like, they're my ride or die partner. And it's like this like Bonnie and Clyde mentality.
I got
like,
you.
We're in this together. We're going to shoot everybody who comes to it. You know, like this kind of thing. You made me think of that when you were saying that.
I understand that.
That's like kind of the extreme
side
of it. The Bonnie and Clyde dynamic.
We'll sure.
Call that's ego that's mass.
Like ego mass.
Like
exactly.
Ego.
And here's the deal from my perspective. Both the aggressive person and the passive person struggle with a lack of identity, from my perspective, okay? Because what happens is, you know, the aggressive person doesn't necessarily know who they are. They've just learned to use anger and aggression to get what they want from people, okay? The tendency is to overassert, so I'm just aggressive. So either I have people around me who can't stand up to me, or the people that can soon fall away. You follow me? That's how I would begin to identify some of those patterns and cycles based on relationships. So if the people around me just have to say yes to me, or else I get mad at them and they're punished in some way or another, either by my cold shoulder or by my physical abuse, you follow me? That's my way of making them say yes, which isn't healthy. Or I just don't have anybody in my realm of influence that can speak into my life, you know, in such a way that if they stand up to me, I just distance myself from them. Because a bully can't stand someone else who stands up to them.
And usually that distancing...
It's an inferiority at that point.
Usually that distancing comes in parallel with vilifying, right? Like, can you believe this person said this? And look at them, they're this and this and this. And there's no way I'll never take that from them because they're, basically... Because this particular person that we're talking about, whether it's me, right, in my dysfunction is not willing to say that's I'm inferior and therefore I have to walk away from this person. Instead, I will say I am superior, they are inferior, and they have no right to speak this to me or to do this this
how
egregious
dare they?
Act, right?
Yeah.
And they will be banished from my life because
So
I'm you're speaking from a healthy counseling terms. I'm just trying to put it and flip that into terms of someone who's unhealthy, what that might look like.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I think we can, if I may, we talked about love styles, did we not? And I think that will come back into the, you know, that controller victimized, you know, love style. Do I have to use anger, you know, to motivate people? Because number one, anger is either going to motivate people to say yes, to do what I want them to do, or it will distance people from me that I don't want interacting in my life.
Yeah.
That's what anger does.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anger isn't healthy. Don't get me wrong there. Anger is a healthy emotion.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm using it from a control standpoint, you know, then it's unhealthy.
Mm.
When I have to control other people. So that would be that aggressive end, or, you know, the victimized is the passive end.
That reminds me of the thinking versus feeling and concept of, like, our emotions are valid but not truth.
Sure.
Right?
So not always accurate.
Anger
exactly.
is always valid.
Sure.
Right?
Always, yes.
Valid in the sense that it's a real thing that occurs in me for for real.
Yes.
Like, it's not something that I am imagining. The anger is real. Mm. It's a valid thing inside of me. But it doesn't represent truth. It's not a representative of what the actual reality is.
Yes. Right? That's so, what I guess where I'm, that's where I'm struggling with valid. You know,
I think what I'm trying to say real. Is I'm not wrong because I feel anger. I'm not wrong because I feel sadness, depression, whatever the emotions are.
Right.
Doesn't make me wrong because emotions aren't necessarily something we can control.
Agreed.
Right?
Agreed.
That's what I mean by valid. Yeah. You don't have to invalidate it and say, well, because I think that's where you get into codependence. Well, my anger at this person isn't valid because he's a good person. He really tries. And it's like, no, feelings are valid. Anger's valid.
Right.
How you respond to that anger is, you know, that's what we're talking about. Exactly. I guess that's what you made me think of is saying anger's not wrong. It's not wrong to be angry.
That's right.
It quickly spirals into something wrong as a controller, but it also quickly spirals into something wrong as a victim.
Yes.
Right?
And I think when I heard valid, I'm hearing in my mind that other person that says, you make me angry.
Hmm.
You follow me?
Yeah.
And so that's not accurate.
Correct.
That's correct. A form of accurate, but if I'm thinking that you make that and that's valid, then, you know, that's where I was wrestling with that terminology.
So the terminology could be very...
So I would say anger is a real emotion.
Yeah.
And yes, we can experience it at times and it's not wrong. But yet what we do with that anger, you know, is important.
I guess my thought too is as a controller who's consistently angry.
Hmm.
There's a valid reason you're angry.
Sure.
Right? And I hear you need to address the validity.
Yes. The source, the root. Right.
To get to the root of why you're angry and deal with that.
I'd agree with that.
There's something valid in that emotion.
Sure. There's a source.
Yeah.
And if we can identify...
Valid. Let's throw the word valid.
Well, no, I'm okay with it and I appreciate the opportunity to wrestle through that. Yeah,
exactly. Trying to clarify the meaning there that... There's a reason you're experiencing this emotion.
Right. And I just didn't want valid being true.
Right.
You know, sometimes in a scientific, you know, if it's valid, if it's, you know, valid hypothesis, it becomes true.
Yeah.
You know, but so that's how I was seeing it from that perspective. So moving on in that process, yes, emotions are real, but they are not always accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And if I am blaming other people for my emotion without identifying the source of that anger, which might very well be my insecurity, okay, then that's where we need to start. And being able to recognize that I might be trying to pump up or inflate my own identity or insecurity, buoy up my insecurity with my aggressive actions. And it's not healthy and it's actually counter to, because I don't have anybody in my life who is actually able to be a, in CR we'd use accountability. I don't have people that I allow to hold me accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So I have developed this pattern over time of limited relationship. Does that make sense?
It does. I think one of the most difficult... So I think to the codependent, one of the first pieces of advice would be get some accountability. Get someone that can... I think on this side of things, it's a lot more difficult because your natural tendency is to say, okay, I'll do that. And then go, no, but this person's an idiot. I can never find someone who's not an idiot. You know what I mean? And so I think for me, one of the key aspects was to learn to be accountable. So in other words, I have to start doing the work to figure out why I'm angry and telling someone, I think I got angry because of this.
Yeah.
And they might try and tell me what to do, or they might be an idiot. Right? You know, I'm using that air quotes, right?
Yeah.
Because I might feel that way.
Sure.
But
towards that person.
Right. Yes. I might feel like there's no one who's qualified to speak to me in this thing or whatever. I think one of the things I had to learn that accountability was, if I was only depending on someone strong enough to hold me back or grab me and shake me and say, look what you're doing, and me going, oh, yeah, you're right. Like, because there was never going to be that person in my life. I was like, I just need someone strong enough to do that or whatever. And it's like, that's not going to happen. Like, because, our tendency is to push those people away. And it's just not a common thing to find, right?
Right.
However, learning to say, whoever it is on the other side of the couch, so to speak, or the other side of the table, I can be accountable to them. I can confess. I can admit and work on that. And I don't know if that's a baby step. That's probably still pretty far down the line for someone in this thing. But being willing to say, yeah, maybe sometimes I get angry. Maybe I get angry more than I should. And maybe I use that anger as a tool. That's a baby step. And then, you know, where you go from there. I don't know.
I think it is a process. And I think I don't want to necessarily make something that's so complex seem as simple as, you know, one step, because I think, you know, identifying that step for an individual, you know, can be a complex thing. And then what do I do next? Well, sometimes that's going to depend on your circumstance, you know, but I do think, you know, accountability and a continued influence to that from a positive, that becomes the baby step and the next step. You know, because then at that point, you're able to start unpacking some of those issues. You follow me? I'm able to recognize, okay, I learned this behavior early on, you know, and this is a pattern of my life that's been developed. And I think, you know, that's where, you know, even the later steps, if you will, of, you know, making amends. And, you know, that's all part of that initial getting beyond the denial of, I'm an angry person, and I just use anger to motivate people all the time, either away from me or to do what I want them to do. And is that really how I want to live the rest of my life? You know, and granted, some people would say, yeah, you better respect me. You know, I think that's, well, respect itself is so misunderstood. You know, because, you know, so many people think, well, you know, I turn 18, I turn 21, and now it's my turn.
Yeah.
You know, I deserve respect. No, I'm sorry. I'm going to disagree with that every time. Because I think, you know, and I think it can be a cultural thing to be able to say, well, you know, I'm this now. I deserve respect. No, you earn respect by the way you treat people and how you conduct yourself in relationship. Because it's a... It's not, I don't want to make it light like a currency, but I think it's very similar to that. I can't just demand respect from someone and just because of who my parents are or, you know, where I, my zip code, none of that, you know, bequeaths respect upon you. But it's the way, you know, it's the character from my perspective that, you know, builds or creates respect, allows respect to grow between individuals. That's another topic for another time, of course, but
if you're expecting respect without having to prove the character side of it,
yes,
that could be a symptom, right?
Oh yes, so very much so.
If respect is expected no matter what.
Right. If you don't respect me, I'm gonna
right.
That's not respect.
Right. I did this because you didn't respect me. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
That's a telltale sign of where I find myself in that continuum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult because, again, on that perspective, looking at those two ends of the spectrum, I think the one side often is desperate and listening and searching and willing to hear. Now, they might not be willing to do the work because it represents, you know, messing with what's quote-unquote working. Like, I don't want to make them mad. They might not. But on this side of the spectrum, it's just, I feel like, so much easier to, or so much more difficult for them to be listening, right?
Yeah.
And again, that's why I think we have a unique position here to have this conversation of his mm-hmm. symptoms, because there might be someone listening who has these tendencies. And I would also say, you know, we use the word spectrum, right?
Sure.
The spectrum, you know, and there's all the way to the left and all the way to the right. Mm-hmm. And you might not be all the way to the right on that terrible version or whatever, but right. There might be some relationships that you exhibit an aggressive nature.
Sure.
Right? And so, again, just the nature of this kind of conversation that we're not accusing you because we don't know you.
Right.
But you're able to kind of do some self-assessment. That is, I think, a very important part of working, starting the process to work on these things if you're on that side of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to tell you this. And you know it. You're listening right now. You're like, you know, you're right, Justin. No one's going to tell me that.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't have anybody.
Right.
That dares.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That dares. And if they did, you're right. I'd think they're an idiot because yep. I know this person. And if they did it, I would think this about them. Mm. I know this person. I can't think of a single person. Well, maybe that person.
Mm.
And it's like the president of the United States. You know, it's like, okay, all right. You know.
But not really.
But not really.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's denial, right?
But
Yeah.
And I think I like what you're establishing in that aspect of being able to recognize a need for growth. Mm-hmm. And I think that in some ways that brings us back to there's going to be conflict. I'm going to experience some heat. I'm going to be uncomfortable in this process mm-hmm. of change
mm-hmm.
because there's going to be resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I'm wondering sometimes if that isn't a baby step. Of more so just to be able to recognize that this is going to be hard work.
Mm.
I got to identify it. I got to recognize it. But I also have to, I think kind of, you know, when I'm in my therapy mode, that's, you know, one of my prerequisites, you know, is yeah. If you want change is work.
Yeah.
You know, work in a therapeutic situation. That's my desire, is to create a context for change. You know, and I think we're most like God when we are creating or we are working to make opportunity or space for change.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me? That is the baby step as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
we have to be able to have those environments where we are making opportunity for change. And those environments have to be safe.
Yeah.
Just like a therapeutic setting.
Yeah. Which, again, I think is one of the unique positions we have on this podcast. Is this is as safe as it gets because we don't know you. We're not talking to you specifically, but you're listening. And maybe, you know, you're doing that, creating that context for change. You're going, yeah, maybe that is me or whatever.
And yeah.
I think that's kind of a cool part of this, which I enjoy. But I'm also just thinking, too, like you said, baby step is just maybe asking those questions that you would ask. Well, are you happy with the way this works in your life?
Yes.
Are you content that the rest of your life, there's never going to be anyone who can stand up to you, and the ones that are in your life, you tend to, you know, control with anger. Mm-hmm. Like, is that an acceptable way of life to you? Or do you want more?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you don't have any real relationships because, you know, there's no one who can stand up to you and da da da. And you long for it. Like, you long for a buddy. You long for whatever. But it's just, like, impossible.
Mm.
Do you want that? Like, do you want to see a different version of your life? Because that, I guess, like you said, that is the baby step, is to say, yeah, maybe there is a version of my life that I long for that I just wrote off.
Yeah.
Because it's unicorns and rainbows.
Right.
Right.
Or it seems not necessarily unicorns and rainbows. It seems like it's briars and thickets.
Mm.
You know, it's work. I got some brush hogging to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I have these patterns that have grown up over 20, 30, 40 years that have kind of entrenched me.
Yeah.
I'm in a ditch and I don't even realize it. You know, that kind of thing. That's how I would identify patterns and cycles to a certain degree, because they're just habits that had a purpose at one time, but they've outgrown their value. They've all outgrown their healthiness.
Mm-hmm.
They once provided safety, but they're no longer healthy. And I think that's where our patterns and cycles come from, is those hurts, habits, and hangups, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, because, and we have to be able to, you know, ultimately the next step after, you know, creating a context for change is to challenge patterns and cycles. And that's that's about vulnerability and support.
Yeah.
I have to be, I have to learn to be vulnerable to someone. And in therefore, at that point, when I'm able to be vulnerable, I'm able, support can be, or help in a healthy relationship typically is reciprocated with support. This is something that I'm struggling with. Okay, how can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're willing to identify this pattern and cycle in your life. Okay, you're sharing that with me. I struggle with an addiction to, fill in the blank. And then it's at that point we're able to say, okay, have, you know, what does support look like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there again, we're opening up an opportunity for conflict because I don't feel supported by that. So, okay, how do we have to come back? What does support look like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we can do this in our marital relationships or, you know, a healthy relationship as well. It's like, okay, I tried that, but at the same time, that didn't seem like it was support. So help me understand,
right.
You know, I'm hearing this need, but help me understand how I can support you.
Yeah.
Because evidently what I did, you know, in my own effort didn't get conveyed as support.
Right.
Not for a lack of my desire, but a lack of my knowing what needed to be.
Yep.
So that real support is offered in exchange for that vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, we're able to challenge some of the patterns and cycles of time.
Yeah.
And then we're able to relearn what safety looks like, because safety that I grew up with isn't always healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So and when I challenge those patterns and cycles, then I'm able to relearn what health looks like. And then that helps create more opportunities for change.
Yeah.
So like when I see, you know, conflict as being a healthy thing and I can address it in a way that is, you know, recognizing a need, and, you know, that's reciprocal, then conflict becomes a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
Conflict builds intimacy.
Yeah.
But if I'm in a relationship where, you know, conflict is either ignored or it becomes reactive, that's difficult to address.
Yeah. I so many thoughts.
One at a time, Justin. One at a time. But I'm good with either one.
Well, one thing I was thinking of, too, is, like, if the support you're trying to get is from the person marriage can often be a difficult place to start with support when you're at the beginning stages of working through those cycles, those years of, you know, briars and thicket, as you described, because it's basically saying, like, I need support for me being irritated at you. It's like, well, you shouldn't be irritated at me, or, you know, trying to be real gracious. All right, I want to listen. And then you get triggered as the person trying to offer support. Instead of supporting, you're now fixing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's like...
Or you become defensive.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the two, right? Mm-hmm. And in the case of fixing, it's like, well, I want to support, but I just got anecdotal quick fix solutions for me, which didn't feel like support. It just felt like you trying to get me to stop having the problem, which
right.
It's not the same thing as support, you know.
Right. It's more about you at that point.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Because you need me to be better. I need you to be better, Mark. So here's how you can be better. You know?
You just do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do think the ultimate goal is that those close relationships, you can have support in them.
Mm.
I do think it's difficult in the beginning, especially in the context of marital issues and counseling and all that, like to start with getting support from that spouse is going to be very difficult because it's going to be triggering. Mm. Right. And so it's so important to have a counselor or have a safe context for that support relationship. And again, I talk about Celebrate Recovery, but there's many ways to accomplish this. I'm just saying, if you're hearing this, you go, okay, I just need my spouse to be supportive, and you're holding that high standard to them. When you're the one who's abusive in that relationship or whatever, it's like, no. That's just adding more abusive restrictions.
No doubt.
You know, or vice versa, as the abusee, you know, or the passive side to say, I need you to be supportive of my needs or whatever. Well, they probably don't have the skills and abilities to do that yet. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that's... Because even in a healthy relationship, I consider me and Megan's relationship extremely healthy.
Good.
We've been married for 18 years, you know, mm-hmm. love each other more than we ever have, and yet we recognize how difficult it is to support each other sometimes, because mm-hmm. our tendency, both of us, and we mm-hmm. know this, and we joke about it, we talk about it, we bring, you know, mm-hmm. we call it out in each other when we do it, is to fix, is to go, mm-hmm. oh, I hear your problem. Mm, if you, have you thought about this? Maybe you should just, have you done this? Just do this, right? Mm-hmm. Just, mm-hmm. the word just comes in. It's like, mm-hmm. yeah, this doesn't feel like support anymore. This feels right. like you just needing me to be better so you mm-hmm. feel better. And because there is a natural enmeshment in a marriage relationship mm-hmm. where two become one.
Sure.
And so if you're hurting, I'm hurting. And that's a good part of marriage. Mm-hmm. But it also means if you're hurting, I want to apply salve so that I feel better.
Mm, I hear you.
You know? Yeah. And so I don't know. Well, I'd love to hear your thoughts on all that in terms of...
Well, I'm not disagreeing with anything you share about you and Megan in that process. And for me, I think what, in order to address those dynamics, I would recognize what I feel when you share that. Okay, so do I have an inherent desire to fix? Well, then that's something I need to challenge in myself. Mm. You follow me?
Yeah.
Because I think that's how systems change yeah. is and part of that change is the ability to recognize what I contribute. So if I pull back on what I'm contributing, I make the cycle smaller and it simplifies. Does that make sense? So if I am so there's things that we want to recognize, okay? Am I feeling reactive? Am I starting to feel a defensiveness come up in me? Then I can challenge that in my own. Why? What am I becoming defensive about? Is that a trigger? Is that something, you know, that we've been through before? And I don't want to go back there. You follow me? Mm-hmm. So I think part of that is that ability to recognize what I'm contributing in response to what I'm hearing. So can I just listen? Mm-hmm. So is, you know, if I'm starting to automatically, if I find my thoughts going towards, well, then we just need to do this, and I'm no longer listening, then that's my issue. Mm-hmm. But if I can just stay present, if I can stay mindful in such a way that says, okay, I'm just going to listen. Okay. And at the end of that conversation or at the end of that, and ideally, you know, that process shouldn't go on for a day. Mm-hmm. You follow me? If I'm being vulnerable, I'm going to be able to communicate what I need in a concise, succinct sort of way. You follow me? It doesn't have to be, you know, a run on that goes mm-hmm. on and on. I'm going to be able to, okay, so tell me what you need. And I'm going to listen to that. And at that point, if I'm starting to feel reactive, okay, I may need to do something different, but I'm not. And then you can express that need to me and in such a way that says, and then I'm able to hear it, then it's okay to be able to say, okay, do you want me just to listen or do you want some help in a fix? You know, is that I'm trying to support mm-hmm. and I just need you to tell me that. Mm-hmm. Because if you want help fixing something, I'm your partner. I'm in mm-hmm. it with you. But at the same time, if you just wanted to be able to share something in such a way that I can help carry a burden, lift a burden, lighten a burden, then that's all you need. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm not going to treat you as if you're wrong and you need to be fixed, because nobody likes being fixed.
Right.
And I think so that's how I would walk, you know, through that yeah. dynamic in such a way that says, okay, where's that coming from? Hmm. Is this, you know, is that an identity insecurity on my part that says this person's sharing with me because they want me to be able to fix it? No, they might just want relationship.
Yeah.
They may want to lighten the burden.
Support. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there again, that's where relationship comes into play. because I'm able to say, okay, there's nothing wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
You're operating perfectly based on where you've come from and what you've experienced. So in that process, granted, we're human. So at that point, we're going to have to recognize that, yeah, I'm going to see things differently. But that doesn't make you wrong and me right.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's my thing, is I just feel for people who don't have other people in their lives to be able to support them in healthy ways.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, on the other end of the enmeshed, you know, dynamic is, you know, where people are, there can also be isolation. You follow me? To where on one end, it's like, I'm all about everybody and everybody's all about me.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other end, it's just, I'm on a rock, I'm an island, you know, and a rock doesn't feel any pain and an island never cries, or an island doesn't feel, you know, the Simon and Garfunkel stuff from way back. But, you know, it's like, no, that's not truth, you know, because there's a loneliness that goes there. And I think that can be equated to the aggressive side as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I just live in this isolated world where people have to say yes to me and I don't. And so I guess I just feel for people, and I want to recognize that conflict is oftentimes a healthy thing where growth is concerned. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I want to encourage people, because at that point where I'm able to enter into conflict and I'm able to be authentic and we're able to learn to trust one another, we're going to build intimacy. And that doesn't matter whether it's you and Megan, or doesn't matter whether it's, you know, me and my buddy, you know, that kind of thing. That process, and I think that's when conflict can become a healthy thing,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't need to be avoided.
Hmm.
But that's how I see it. I realize, you know, my experience may not be everybody's experience, but that's mm-hmm. what I guess it tends to be a passion of mine, where that's concerned, mm-hmm. that conflict doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Well, just going back to the beginning with the book quote again, I think I like that perspective, that conflict isn't necessary. It's not something we should seek out or desire in a relationship. It's something we should recognize is a natural byproduct of a healthy relationship.
Yep.
It is a machine working, producing heat.
Yep.
And that heat has to be dealt with for the machine to continue to work as well as it did. Like
yes.
It is a byproduct of a well working machine. But it's also a byproduct that we need to address and work through to keep the machine working well, right?
Yes.
And so I think if if your desire is no conflict, then what you're truly desiring is no relationship.
Yeah.
Because that's the only, that vacuum that's or that on a rock on a hill, like you said, and you know, or yeah, our authenticity.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I think just an important distinction. If you're desiring conflict and you're like, conflict is a part of life and da-da-da-da, you might be the aggressor. You might, you know, you might need to chill out on conflict, but also recognizing that there's always going to be conflict, and learning how to address it and deal with it in a healthy manner is a crucial piece to having a healthy life.
Sure.
To being a vegetable in the sun or in the shade that's producing and healthy and happy. And
yeah. And I think it's interesting because we, you know, even in the analogy used of the motor, you know, we have, I think conflict, when it's done well, has ways of other systems that help us dissipate the heat. You follow me? Mm-hmm. An engine has a radiator. Mm-hmm. It has an exhaust that it directs that heat in a safe manner.
Yeah.
You know, and yet there's also this radiator that's taking in fresh air all the time to just run through that water, you know, that cooling system, you know. So I think it is a healthy system has ways of dealing with that heat and dissipating it in such a way that no one has to be harmed by it.
It's so good. it makes me think of the inventor of the combustion engine, right? They didn't start with a radiator.
Oh, sure.
And oil.
No, I hear you.
They created it, ran, it got hot, it blew up, and they said, oh, we need to do something about this heat, right?
Yes.
And it was a process of figuring out, to where now it the combustion engine is well figured out, right?
Yeah.
And the radiators, the water, all those things, like
The systems.
Yeah, and I think you might be in a place where you have an engine that overheats a lot and you don't know that you need a radiator, but I will say that relationships are also a well-figured-out machine, right?
Oh, like, sure.
There are books, there are resources, there are counselors, there are churches, there are places to go to learn, you know, what's important in a relationship. Well, you need a radiator, you know?
Yeah.
Let's say the radiator is, you said, bringing in fresh air. Well, in, as a believer, is reading God's word and listening to the Holy Spirit speaking to me, is breathing life into me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or an outlet, right? You need an outlet for the heat, so your exhaust system. Well, that might be working out.
Yeah.
That might be F3, you know, community of other believer, you know, brothers and working out together or whatever. It might be counseling as an outlet for that steam and that heat, right? Like,
but learning tools.
Yeah, recognizing that those pieces are crucial parts to this, I think is very important.
Sure. Yeah.
To a machine that's working well.
Agreed.
That's how I see it.
That's how I see it. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you. That was good. Now let's fight about it. I mean, conflict. Hey, thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like How I See It, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us, and or talk nicely about us on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is us@howiseeit.click. Yep, I said .click, as in .click. Please tell your friends about this show, and we'll see you on the next one.